Hello and welcome to the No Nay Never podcast. I'm Jamie Smith, and with me today are Adam, Kevin, and James to talk about another draw for Burnley. A 2-2 draw with Birmingham City at Turf Moor at the weekend, and we'll briefly go over the cup loss to Port Vale too. Another early kickoff, another game on telly. James, draw, fair result again, do you think?
Yeah, probably. I'm actually trying to remember if they had more than like the two chances that they really scored. I think the main issue with the game was any time it looked like a good game was about to develop, the referee did something stupid, and that sort of seemed to take everything out of it many times, because that was probably the most inept refereeing display I've seen in, well, ever.
There was a few decisions we'll have to go over a bit later in the podcast. Frustrating performance, really, from Burnley, wasn't it, Kevin? It was sort of stop-start. We seemed to get going quite well, but then conceded a really poor goal.
Yeah, the first half was a complete non-starter for us. It was quite frankly terrible. The second half, it was good to get the early goal. And then we, like you said, we had a really good spell not long after the goal, but then they scored, and then we seemed to go back to our first half form for about the next 10-15 minutes. And it was really bad again, and we could have nicked it at the end. I think we had another good spell after Taylor's excellent goal, but I think overall a draw was definitely a fair result. I think if we'd got all 3 points, I'd have been delighted, but I think Birmingham would have felt a bit hard done by, really. I think James wondered if they had any other chances. I think we definitely had a few chances in the first half. Can't think of many they had in the second, other than the dive. But I think they forced Heaton into a good save in the first half, and they obviously hit the post as well. So they could have scored a couple of more. So I think we were. I'm happy with a point, all things considering.
Well, we can come on to the dive next, but Adam, when they scored, when they went back in front, we were probably on top at that point. And if the referee hasn't made that decision, do you think we go on and win that game?
Yeah, I think it was quite interesting to watch, because our confidence seemed to be quite low when we were doing badly. We tended to just keep in within ourselves and didn't do very well. But then we did one good thing, and we seemed to get momentum up quite easily. But when they scored, that seemed to knock us out of the first half. Really, it ruined any sort of momentum that we got going. I suppose it's not really surprising. The after relegation that our confidence is low as a unit, but I suppose that'll grow. And although the first half was terrible, I wasn't too displeased with the second half. It wasn't great. It wasn't good, but it was just frustrating again. But not absolutely awful, as some people made out after the game.
I think it's quite interesting what you said about the momentum, because I think something I've noticed is that I'd probably say our best player from the first two games, maybe given the first half, aside from the first half at Leeds, has been Duriqua. I think his second half at Leeds was really good, and it was excellent again on Saturday. I think it's quite interesting that our best player is the one who spent all last season winning games, whereas some of the players who were with us last season, who were probably a bit more hit and miss with their form, maybe not performing up to the best, are the ones who spent all last season losing games. And I think you often find that transition from relegation to the league below is very difficult, particularly in the first half of the season. I think you see that teams are relegated in the first couple of months. There was an exception, but the first couple of months seem to have quite a few dodgy results. But we've some good characters come back three times now this season, and there were certainly signs on Saturday that when we've got that confidence, we can play really well and be a really good team. So I was really hoping to get that win, and hopefully that gives us that big boost of confidence, and we can take the how we played at the end of the game on Saturday to the rest of the season. But yeah, I think that the promotion and relegation factor between Dirico and the rest of the team is quite interesting. I think that just has played a big part so far.
That is a good point. I think it's worth remembering that Dirico was playing in League Two until a year ago, so he's moved up the leagues quite rapidly, and he's probably still maybe carried on a wave of just enjoying it and enthusiasm. But I think some of the players who ended last season quite badly, and I'm thinking in particular of Scott Arfield and George Boyd, as two to pick out if I want to name names, I think they've started the season badly as well. And turning around their form and confidence, I think it's going to be one of the biggest jobs Dyche has got at the moment. And we have to talk about the referee, really. It would be a strange podcast if we managed not to. Probably two decisive decisions, James. Dyche was particularly upset about the early one, where I think it was expected to have hold of Duke in the box. Very similar foul to the one we saw last week at Leeds. He felt that should have been a straight red and a penalty. And then, of course, the penalty Birmingham got that was awarded after the referee had got in Ben Mee's way at the other end.
Yeah, I honestly found it really difficult to remember anything of the actual football in the game, just because the overwhelming memory of the game is just how inept Coote was. I mean, you mentioned the penalty there. He gets in the way of Ben Mee, and it's not just like an accident that, you know, occasionally happens, you know, one time out of 100 in that sort of situation. He just doesn't seem to actually really know where he's running. He looked confused before it happened, and then, you know, he clearly gets in the way. And then, obviously, he gives that penalty it's clearly a dive, in my opinion. And, you know, I think what the lad said to Sky afterwards says it all, that, you know, he felt a touch and went down. That doesn't, you know, scream to me, I felt I was fouled. It says, you know, I felt a little bit of something, so I thought I'd fall over. And then, you know, you look at the early decision where, I can't actually remember if Duke actually went down. I think he sort of stays up, doesn't he? But it's evident he's impeded. The lad's got, you know, three quarters of his shirt in his hand, and the referee's giving nothing. And it was the same, I think, all first half for Duke. You know, I've heard some people say Duke had a bit of shirt of the other lad, but the other lad normally had his arms around him in sort of a full Nelson. So, you know, if you're not getting free kicks for that, you're just not going to get free kicks for anything, are you?
I want to talk about Duke in a bit more detail a bit later on, but staying on the referee for now, the frustrating thing for me about the penalty that he's given to Birmingham is that his position, he's really good. He's got in a perfect position to see that Donaldson's tripped himself up, but he's just got conned by the dive. And for me, I don't think he should be a referee if you're getting decisions that wrong. I think it's that straightforward. The drop in quality seems to be huge down to the Championship.
I've heard him described apparently as a bright refereeing prospect for the future. Well,
that's concerning, isn't it? If he's one of the best young referees around.
On that evidence, I'm pretty concerned for the future of the Premier League and any cup finals that, you know, blind man gets to referee.
I think the positioning ones are particularly disappointing aspect of the decision, because you've got to accept that referees have a really tough job. We get a 5 or 6 different replays from different angles, really good angles, which are focused on the ball and focused on the foul. Whether the referee is often running and he's got players in his way, he's not at the best angle. But like you say, on Saturday, he probably had the best view of anybody in the house. I think he had a better view than the cameras had. He had the best view possible. I'd love to know what he thought happened, because I have no idea what was going through his mind. But I think that made it particularly disappointing. It's not like he had players in his way, and he just saw a player go over. It's actually, but he should have seen that better than anybody.
Yeah, there was absolutely no excuse for getting that decision wrong. And I was very angry about the referee, as I think most Burnley fans were. But I wrote a piece afterwards, and basically I made the claim that there needs to be more accountability. Like, if the media could grill the referee afterwards, maybe yes, the claim against this is that it would put even more scrutiny on referees. But also, they have a chance to almost defend themselves or say, yep, sorry, I was wrong, and therefore reinstate faith in referees from fans. It's more sad than anything. Like, you get the anger obviously in the moment, and then afterward you think, well, this is actually a game and it's being ruined sometimes by just ineptitude, and I don't really wouldn't really know how you improve something like that. And the argument again, like that we have slow-mo replays and stuff, but we've had them for at least 15 years now, and the refereeing standards seem to have got much worse, like especially in the Championship.
I think the accountability thing stinks, really. I think, and the FA did that whole half-assed respect campaign a couple of years ago, didn't they? When we were trying to get more respect for referees and the opposition team and stuff. But I don't see how anyone can respect referees while they've got no accountability. I think, like you say, if referees could go and speak to the media afterwards and say, okay, this is why I made this decision, or I got this wrong, or if it's a controversial decision, may explain why he made that decision. Maybe there'll be a bit more accountability. I can't think of any, like, if I was at work and I wanted people to respect me, I wouldn't just ignore them. And if I did something wrong, just hide away and not explain myself. I'd explain myself and hope to have respect for that. I just don't think it makes any sense. Referees, and I expect referees are often quite frustrated by it as well, actually, because if they make a decision that they think's correct, and then afterwards they're ripped to shreds, surely they'd want to kind of defend themselves and say, well, actually, this is why I made that decision.
Yeah, there was, I don't know if you saw, but there was a Swedish referee recently. He set up a Facebook page, didn't he, so he could explain some decisions, and then shut it down about 2 days later, saying that it was taking up too much time to maintain. So I thought that was a really positive step, and then it was just two steps backwards. James.
Although that sounds quite funny that in 2 days he made so many bad decisions that he had to explain. But
I think it was more it that someone at the Swedish FA was just like, yeah, you can't do that.
I've thought for years that, you know, there should be a press conference for the referee, regardless of whether he's made a bad decision or not. And I think the other thing as well on Saturday's game for cheating was just the way some of the Birmingham players acted towards the end. Now, I think there was an instance where we got a corner and six of the men who were around the referee claimed it's not one. I mean, it's a court. It's not like he's given a penalty where you could maybe understand them, you know, wanting to get their point across to the referee. But when he's given a corner, I don't think I've ever seen six players remonstrate with the referee over a corner before. And I think that was just, you know, ridiculous. And it showed the control that he'd lost on the game. And, you know, there's other instances that showed how much control he'd lost where, you know, he uses his magic spray to put down a line for the wall and then just lets them stand wherever they want, which was just a bit bizarre.
Yeah, I noticed that. I felt, you're exactly right, he didn't have control of the game for me. There was one incident, weren't there? I think Ben Mee's booking. You can get the freeze frame. I think we put it on Twitter or retweeted someone. And you can see that Mee's brushed Cottrell's arm with his finger, and Cottrell's legs have broken underneath him. It's absolutely crazy how strong Ben Mee's little finger must be.
And then not long after that, you know, Ben Mee's been booked for that, but was it Grounds playing left back? Absolutely hacks Sodell down. Not just like, you know, a little niggle. He actually swings through Sodell's lower legs, and he gets away completely scot-free, which, you know, on the face of it, if you compare the two, one's a booking and one's not, and it's not the way around it happened.
The Mee one would have been a booking if he'd actually fouled him, but he didn't touch him. Cottrell should be booked for cheating. Coming back to the accountability point that Adam was making earlier, I think one of the problems is that cheats don't get challenged by the media at all. They just get away with it. So we see things like last season, remember the Chelsea game, Jose Mourinho was allowed to go on Goals on Sunday and put his agenda about Ashley Barnes. There was nothing about, well, Chelsea's cheating all the game. And I thought it was extraordinary, really, that after the game, I think Gary Rowett was the first of the two managers to be interviewed, and he was complaining about the free kick for our first goal. He said it was soft against Kiteley. And there was no challenge from the reporter about the fact that Donaldson had quite clearly dived, and you can see that he's dived without replays. So there's no need to go on about technology. I think referees have got a difficult job, but in that instance, it's a terrible call. You can see it immediately. So there's just no excuses for that. And then Sky had the cheat to go and give Donaldson the Man of the Match award. It's like, well done, you just cheated and got your team a point. And they interviewed him on the pitch and didn't call him, call him out on the fact that he admitted he cheated. They just let him say it and move on. It was bizarre.
And also the all three pundits said, "Oh, that's not a penalty." And it's like, well, there's no producer at Sky or someone, the director of the thing, gone in, David Craig, who was the reporter's ear, going, "Oh, ask him about the penalty or whether he was cheating or whether he went down or whether it's right that he went down." The thing is, you get tarred with the brush of you're being bitter, but like, if it was the other way around, if like a Birmingham player got wrongfully a wrongful decision against him, which didn't happen on Saturday, but if that happened, you'd also want Sky to question them, and that, like, it's not a one way thing. I don't want it just when Burnley get bad decisions. It's a thing that should happen all the time.
Even in the live commentary, I think, was it Don Goodman who was the summariser? He called it soft, and I'm sick of these euphemisms that we let footballers get away with for cheating. They call it a soft penalty when he's cheated. Call him a cheat. I know it gets back pages and stuff when the pundits have a go at the footballers, but they're there to give opinions, not just sugarcoat stuff. Peter Beagrie, he's got multiple replays of Donaldson diving, and he says it's professionalism to go down when you get a touch in the box. If we're going to excuse this cheating, then I think we should just pack up and go home. I get really disillusioned with football when I see things like that, and it just makes me feel a bit sick, really. I just don't want to bother with it anymore. Anyway, I want to move it on from the ref because I'm getting angry again, and I've just about calmed down from Saturday. Let's talk about Lukas Jurkovic instead. That'll cheer me up. It was a difficult game for Jurkovic. I think James already pointed out that he was being mauled, really, by Jonathan Spector for most of the game. The thing I would counter to that is that I think Duke's just got to be stronger. You've got to battle back. And I don't think you'd see someone like Sam Vokes get bullied physically by a defender the way that Duke has the last 2 weeks. Kevin, if I can bring you back in on Duke, what was your thoughts on his performance? I saw, actually, there were some people on a popular Burnley FC message board rating Lukas Jurkovic on Saturday's performance as an 8 out of 10. I thought that was crazy.
I just, bless him. I feel so sorry for him. He tries his best, but he's just not good, is he? I mean, I think at some point in the second half he had a relatively acceptable shot, and I think that's the first relatively acceptable shot he's had in over a year. In the first half, the ball dropped to him in the box, and he had no one near him. Okay, it dropped at an awkward height, but he essentially just passed it to the keeper. And I think if that dropped to Sam Vokes or to Danny Ings, that would be hammered, at least towards goal. We might have put, okay, Duke maybe went for positioning, but it just positioned it into the keeper's arms. And it's just one of those opportunities where you just got to hit it, you just got to whack it. And it didn't. And I think it summed up everything about his Burnley career for me. And he was there, but his clinic, his clinical something was bad, but there's just no clinical side to him whatsoever in the slightest. And I think it is a shame because he seems like a decent lad, and it definitely looks like he really wants to succeed, and he puts a lot of effort into it, and he got some nice touches on the ball here and there. But if he's been here over a year, and I think I've just seen his first relatively acceptable shot, and he's a striker in more than a year, that says it all for me. And I know Dyche alluded before the match that Sam Vokes is not 100% fit. I'd take a partly fit Vokes over Duke any day of the week. I really hope he's off to Forest as part of a Lansbury deal, because I don't wish him bad. I really want him to do well, because he seems like a nice chap, and I'd quite like him to go to Forest and grab a few goals, as long as it doesn't cost us anything. I think he's never going to make an impact at Burnley, and I think it's time for him to leave now.
I think you're right what you say. People feel sorry for him now, and it's just a bit pathetic, isn't it, really, if you're in a situation where the professional footballers who were paid good amounts of money, and remember, Jurkovic was brought in as a Premier League player, was brought in to fill in for Sam Vokes. And he's never looked like scoring a goal for me, and I think that's the worst thing you can say about a striker. It's all very well saying he tries, but Dyche himself says that, what is it, maximum effort is minimum requirement. So just that he works hard, that's almost an insult for me, if that's the only thing you can say about him. But to end on a slightly positive note on Djokovic, at least that chance that you mentioned, Kevin, where he passed it to the keeper, at least he hit the ball. Sordell had a chance in the six-yard box in the second half. He wouldn't even hit it. Screaming at the telly, just hit the ball, Marv, hit it. He didn't look like he knew what the ball was. James?
Yeah, I think the big thing with Duke was that every time he seemed to shoot, it was like something just went wrong. There was just something about the scenario that meant he couldn't try and get the ball on target. You know, there was one first half, he swings at it and sort of slices it off the outside of his boot when he's trying to attempt a volley. And there's another volley second half, and it's blocked by the defender before it even sort of leaves his boot. It just seems like no matter what he does, he can't connect with the ball in a way that puts it with any sort of velocity towards the net. And for me, the strangest thing about the game was that, you know, I'd say it was another game where you could say he's played well, his positioning's been good, but he hasn't scored. And this is probably like his sixth game that's been just like that. You know, there's a couple of them beginning there last season, and there's been two so far this season. And what we know from last season, obviously, is that he'll be like that for a couple of games, and eventually, I think, all confidence goes, and then he's just sort of a shell on the football field, which is, it's disappointing, because he does seem like a nice guy. And, you know, you can clearly see that if he maybe did get a couple of goals and had confidence, then he might be able to score more goals, but it just never seems to look like happening. And disappointing for me was that he stayed on when Vossen came off, because I thought Vossen was really warming into the game at that point. You know, he'd had the flick on for Keane's header, and he looks like he can get a ball in, and occasionally he got out wide and he was putting crosses into the box. And from a tactical standpoint, I can't see any point in having Djokovic and Vaux on at the same point unless you're going to start giving the ball to Heaton and kicking it straight to one of those two and completely bypassing everything in the middle.
I think after the match, I was looking on our known in ever chat, which us guys have, and before the match, Jamie has said jokingly that someone had suggested playing Djokovic and Vaux together and just seen how ridiculous that was. And then Dyche went and did it in the second half. I'm not quite sure why that happened. But I agree about Vossen. I think he's had a bit of stick from some people, and he's certainly been quiet in the first few games. But I think he came close to scoring at Leeds when he almost stuck his foot out far enough. And if his foot had been half an inch further forward, that would have been a goal, I think. I mean, it was a really smart flick on for Keane's goal on Saturday. I think the problem with Vossen on Saturday for me is he looked like he was being forced into midfield. I think he was waiting up at the top, but the ball wasn't able to come to him because there was nobody in that space being able to connect the midfield to the strikers. There was a big gap between the two, and he was having to drop so far back. Sometimes he was pretty much in the centre circle just coming to get the ball. And that's the problem, really, is that he can't have a big effect on the game up top when he's coming into midfield. And I think he was essentially doing two roles at the moment. So I'd like to judge Vossen a little bit more when we've got, I'm not going to say the L word, but when we've got a midfielder in the middle to come in and play that role and allow Vossen to stay a bit further forward and play his natural game a bit more.
Often on the striking situation, often the excuse is that there's not been good deliveries, but I did notice we had a few really great deliveries. Me actually did a couple of great, like, across the goal mouth crosses, and there's actually, although there is merit in the argument that you need to, if you're going to score, you need to have good crosses and good deliveries and good service, but at some point it does come down to the strikers. And I don't know where I saw it, I think maybe one of us guys said it, but
Ashley Barnes,
it is Kevin. There we go. Ashley Barnes is the only striker that Dyche has bought that has scored a league goal, and I don't know. if it's fair to judge Dyche on his transfer record, but at some point you have to. Like, you can only use the Scott Arfield defence a number of times before you go, well, is he actually that good in the transfer market? But I suppose we'll find out at the end of August.
You're talking about deliveries there, just something completely unrelated, which I noticed. But in Burnley game, in two Burnley games this season, there's been two goals from crosses, and they've both been us. I mean, what? From last, I mean, maybe we've actually learned something from last season from watching all those crosses going against us and conceding them all. Maybe we've learned how to score them ourselves this season. It's quite strange seeing a cross go in and it being a goal and it not be at the other end.
Well, good point, and I think that we've all been from crosses, haven't they? Our goals, or set pieces, crosses or set pieces. We haven't really created much in open play yet. Before we move on to something else, there's obviously Hennings to come in on the striker front that we've not really mentioned yet, but talking about Jukovic, I think Kevin's already mentioned the Lansbury deal. We're reluctant to talk too much about the Lansbury deal because it's dragged on for so long. I'm sure everyone's sick of it. But the word is from Forest that they want a player as part of the deal. Scott Arfield's been mentioned. I imagine that's a non-starter, but the other one is Jukovic, who played under Dougie Friedman at Bolton and did quite well on loan from Middlesbrough. Would we all be quite happy to see Duke go with Vokes coming back to fitness and Hennings coming in as well? Does that seem like a deal that makes sense, James?
Well, at this point, I think it's more we want a midfielder, so yeah. I'd be disappointed in a way to see him go because I do feel like, you know, if he got a goal in the league, in North Friendly, he might get the confidence to, you know, get some more goals, but. You know, we've seen Vokes get one now, and if Vokes can start scoring again regularly, then I don't think you really have the space for two players of that similar mould.
Can I just clarify the question, Jamie, because I'm quite confused. Is the question, would I like to see us bring in a midfielder and get rid of Duke? And that's supposed to be a question.
To see it from that way, I would keep him if it was just, should we sell him? But I would personally drive from Bristol to Turf Moor, pick Duke up and then drive him to the City Ground if it was an exchange for Lansbury.
That's a very generous offer. That might make the deal a bit smoother if we've got a taxi service going on there as well. I think that surely the issue is that Duke's just going to be surplus to requirements now. He's arguably only started because Volks isn't fully fit. Hennings has come in. He's seen what we know about Hennings. He seems similar sort of style, sort of big, bustly striker. There's surely not going to be room for Duke, you'd think. Folks, Hennings and Vossen, it's going to be two of those three. Then there's Sordell and Long, who are different options. I don't understand why Duke would fit in on that.
At this rate, we're going to be fielding two strikers starting and six on the bench. So, yeah, I think that it is a case of how many more strikers can you have in. And you know, Duke's been a championship starter in the past, and obviously Vossen's come in probably expecting first team football, and I'm sure Hennings is the same, and you're just not going to be able to keep that many strikers happy over the course of a season. You know, at best you can probably really have one reclamation project going on, can't you?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Joining us now to fill us in on new signing Ruben Hennings is German semi-professional footballer Eric Papstein. Thanks for joining us, Eric. What can you tell us about Hennings?
Yes, I know Hennings now over 10 years, I think. In the youth team, I played two times against him, but it's, yes, over 10 years ago. But I'm a very big German football fan, so I watched many games of Ruben Hennings in different teams. Yes, and I can say that it's a good choice for Burnley, I think. It's a good striker. Played last year for Karlsruhe. Also a famous club in Germany, played now in the second division, but in the past they had many good players, like maybe you know Oliver Kahn, I think, the Titan of Germany, he played for Karlsruhe. Yes, and I think he's a strong striker and a good choice for Burnley.
He was top scorer in Bundesliga 2 last season, is that right?
Yes, that's right. I think 17 goals he scored, and also a goal against his ex-club Hamburg in the relegation match to get to the Bundesliga, but they lost in the second match, I think.
And what sort of striker is he? Is he someone who likes to lead the line? Is he a sort of target man player?
I think he's a very physically striker, strong physically, fast, very strong left foot. Aggressive striker, I think. On the field, he's very aggressive, so I think he fits perfect to the English football.
That's what I was going to ask next. German football is quite similar to English football in some ways, don't you? He's towards his late 20s, isn't he? So do you think that's a good age to be moving? There seems to be a lot of players leaving Germany because the pay is just too low compared to what players can earn in England.
Yes. I think he's 27 now. He's my age. And I think the age is perfect now. And I think I thought he will go to a Bundesliga club this year because he played so well last season. Yeah, but now he goes to Burnley. And yes, I think it's a very good choice from him and from Burnley too.
What sort of service does he thrive on? Does he like a lot of crosses or through balls? What sort of goals does he ought to score?
I think he scored many goals with his left foot from outside the box and inside the box last season. But yeah, he's very good with shots from far away from the goal and very good in German counter. What's this? I don't know the name in English, but yeah, he's fast and scores the goals when his team makes a cross, right? Yes.
So he's good in the air then.
Yeah. Well, I think he's very good in the air, but also at with his left foot, he scores the most goals last season, I think.
You mentioned earlier that you played against him a few years ago.
Yeah.
Does anything stand out from that? Obviously, it was a while ago. If it jog your memory a little bit.
I only can say I think he scored 3 or 4 goals against us. And that he was very fast. And at this age, I think we were 15, he was physically much better than we were in the past. So like now, I think he's physically very strong. And it's, a very good strength of him.
Just finally then, you think he's going to be a big success at Burnley? You think he'll do well?
I think so, yes. I think he will score many goals for Burnley. I have to say that I don't know so much about the championship, but I know that my boss Liam is a big Burnley fan, so I follow Burnley a little bit, and I think he will help them maybe to get back to the Premier League again, yes.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot for your insight, Eric. Well, moving on from that, we want to touch briefly on the game at Port Vale. We've got a little problem with the midweek games here at the podcast, because we normally record on Monday nights, and it basically means that we tend to be a game behind. So we're not going to talk much about the Ipswich game, because that might be in the past by the time people are listening, but we can go over Port Vale. Seemed like a pretty dire match, pretty dire performance. Kevin, the only shining light was that we didn't have to suffer extra time.
Yeah, I think that's as much as you can say about it, really. I don't think anybody was too well. Reading some people online, some people were distraught, but I think people are always going to be distraught after a defeat. But I think thinking a bit more rationally, I don't think anybody really cares. Nobody's going to look back and think, "Oh God, I wish we'd beat Port Vale in that League Cup first round match." I'm not really bothered at all, and particularly given it would have been nice to win the match just for that confidence thing we were talking about earlier about, you know, we spent all last season losing games and maybe carrying over from that bit. So it would have been nice to win the game from that perspective, but from a competitive kind of competitions basis, we lost the game. Let's move on.
I think it's fair to say that some people who went were disappointed that it was such a lame performance, really. I think there was maybe one shot on target throughout the game, which is unacceptable, you've got to say, in any competition. But when you play in a team that's a league below you, you would expect to have more than that, especially when it was
a strong team that Dash put out. But in the grand scheme of things, Adam, a League Cup tie at Port Vale, it's not going to be something that we're going to worry too much about, is it? Although you don't want to lose games. If we're going to lose one at this stage of the season, that's the one that we'd pick.
Yeah, it's. I'm not too bothered, really. I was just pretty nonplussed. I was editing last week's podcast while it was on, and I was like, oh, we've lost now. So, it's funny, the cup competitions. Like, as soon as you get further in, you start caring. But if you go out, no one really minds anymore. And
I think it was definitely relief when Paul Vale scored at the end. I didn't really want to have to follow another half hour of that. It's worth pointing out, I think, that a lot of Championship clubs went out to lower league opposition. I think it was six or seven in total, which is more than you'd expect. So it wasn't just those. Rovers went out at home to, was it Scunthorpe? I forget now. Shrewsbury. And a couple of other teams went out. I think Leeds lost to Doncaster on penalties as well. So it wasn't just those who went out at the first hurdle. And yeah, we'd all like to see a little cup run, but I don't think any of us are too fussed. Looking forward then, we'll talk a bit about Saturday's game, which is Brentford coming to Turf Moor. There's obviously the McParland link there. Brentford have done quite well since coming up. There were playoffs last year, and they've changed the manager this season and brought in a few new players. They're going for this money ball approach, which is quite interesting. Andre Gray started the season well as well. It's going to be a tough game, another home game coming off the back of a long trip to Ipswich as well. It's starting to look like it's a tough start to the season, isn't it, James?
I think it was always going to be the case that at least Leeds was going to be a tough game for us. It's a difficult place to go, Elland Road, and from what I've heard from Leeds fans, it was one of the best atmospheres they've had in years. So the fans were clearly, he's feeling enthusiastic. Birmingham probably shouldn't have been as difficult as we made it. Granted, obviously the referee did play a little part in that, but you know, Ipswich is never an easy place to go, and obviously Brentford are, you never really want to come against the sides that are, you know, playing the way they do, which is, you know, they seem to almost have a confidence that's sort of above the level that they should. Probably kind of like we did the first time round when we got promoted, and we were kind of a cobbled together side that really seemed to give the teams a lot of difficulty.
I think it's going to be an interesting game. Brentford adapted better to the Championship than I think anyone expected, and Gray in particular is a lower league podder for some years and seems to have caught fire in the last few months, so I think it'll be a good challenge and a game that, another sort of game that you'd look at and think, if we're going to be in the Shear Cup at the end of the season, that's the sort of match that we'd probably have to win. Ipswich and Brentford then, what sort of points totals would you be looking for from those two games, Kevin? Would you be thinking three or four?
I think you definitely want to win one of them, so I'd say three is a minimum. I'd be looking for four. Ipswich, tough place to go, particularly for Burnley. So get a point there and get our first win in front of fans at the Turf, I'd be really happy with that.
Adam, what about you? Would you be confident that we can get that first win on the board in the next couple of games?
Yeah, I'm going to be optimistic and say, yeah, I think, like, the thing with, I don't want to go back to last week, Saturday's game, but we weren't, although we were terrible in the first half, in the second half, we weren't that far away. If we can keep that up for a sustained amount of time, we will utterly dominate teams. So, like, if that can happen in the next week, and I suppose if it could easily, it could well happen in that short space of time, then you, we could see us pick up a win.
We know that Dash likes a settled team, but given the two draws so far, James, do you think there's some tweaks that he could make? Certainly Matt Taylor's made himself a good case for coming into the side with that excellent free kick that we've not really mentioned for spending 15 minutes complaining about referees and cheating.
I think Taylor's got a chance, but I think personally Carly would be a little bit hard done by to get dropped. And I think if anyone was gonna come out of the side, I think it might actually be George Boyd, because he doesn't really even seem to have shown his usual running at the moment. But for me, just a little bit different to Kev, I'd say that really the minimum I'm looking for at these two games is 4 points. I think if we want a challenge at the end of the season, we've got to at least win the Brentford game at home. I thought we really need to win on Saturday, to be honest, to sort of send a message to teams that Turf Moor was going to be one of the more difficult places to go. And obviously, I think that the key always is try and win your home games and not lose away. So I'd take a draw at Ipswich. Particularly, as I said, you know, it's not always the best place to go. It's a long journey, and it's difficult for travelling fans as well. Which, on an aside, the ticket price for a Tuesday night at Ipswich is absolutely obscene. But yeah, I think Taylor's got a shout, and maybe for Boyd and up front, I think you've got to expect that Volks gets the nod ahead of Duke.
Was it a case of Saturday being last chance for Duke then, with Hennings having already been confirmed as well?
I'm not sure whether I'd say last chance. You know, I think he's still putting a decent performance despite not scoring. You know, he certainly wasn't an 8 out of 10, because you'd have to score to get 8 out of 10 as a striker, in my mind at least. But you know, he certainly wasn't disgracing himself with his performance. But I just feel after we've seen the header that Volk scored opening day of the season, you know, he looks a little bit sharper, and it just almost feels wasteful when you've got, you know, two full-backs who can put a decent ball in the box, getting early crosses in, you've not really got someone who seems to look like he's going to get his head on the end of them.
Well, that's about all we've got time for on this week's Not Another Podcast. Two games to go over next week's show, Ipswich away and Brentford at home, so hopefully you'll join us for that. Thanks as ever to our sponsors at Neville G. Thanks for listening. There's still a questionnaire that we'd like to fill in if you haven't already. That will be in the show notes. Just let us know how we're doing, what we can do to improve the podcast. You can also get in touch with any feedback or comments to our email address, as always, which is podcast@nonever.net. But that is it for this week. So thanks to Adam, Kevin and James for joining me. And we'll be back next week.